This lesson, I think I'm going to present it a little bit differently, not really a whole lot differently, but just a little bit differently. We're going to start with our questions. And we'll probably go through question 10 at this point. That's what I'm looking at anyway. So we may go a little further than that. We have 22, and I actually have added one on mine at the bottom of my page. So we may have another one when it comes down to it. First question there on your handout says, in chapter 20, Moses discusses warfare of the nations outside of the promised land. What does he say there or here about the captive women that they capture when they go, and this is outside of the land of Canaan? You know, we've talked about that a couple of times. Inside the land of Canaan, what were they to do with anybody that breathed? They were to destroy them, right? They were to kill them. But outside, there were still some enemies, like the children of Israel, there were still some enemies out there. But God gave some provisions for that, and we may talk a little bit more about that. But what did he say about the captive women? I'm sorry? They could take them as plunder, right. Now, could they make a slave out of them? Right. Not really a slave so much, but as a servant, so to speak, with compensation. We'll say a servant with compensation, which is, you know, it's like, well, they're not a slave. They're a servant with compensation. But what else could they do? And you got to remember, they probably killed their husbands, so that gives you a hint. They could marry them, right. But there were some stipulations on that. They had to wait till the period of mourning was over for them to go through with their husbands being killed. And then they could marry them. Could they ever divorce them? No. See, you see, think about that. He says, okay, you know, you got these captives, you can capture them. If they're pretty and you want to marry them, you can do that. But he re-emphasizes, this all goes back to, I'm sorry, I got a hitch. It all goes back to the idea that when God instituted marriage, it was one time for all time, basically, is what it amounts to. One husband, one wife for all time. Okay. But, you know, because of their hardness of heart, Moses had granted them the ability to give their wife a bill of divorce so that they didn't have to stay married to them. And he could put them away. They could put them away. But not in this case. Absolutely not in this case. Why do you think that was? Because he wanted to get everybody back to the rule he established from the very beginning, is there was no divorce. Okay? I think that's part of it. He was trying to teach everything God did, even the Ten Commandments. He was trying to teach not only the children of Israel, but he was trying to teach the other people that in the land of Canaan, the heathen people, about God and about what his laws were. Yeah, John? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There was some I call it some funny rules he put out there. You know, you wonder why, but I think he was trying to get back to the fact that there should not be a divorce in the first place. If you marry this woman, this should be your wife. Now, I'm not going to say that, you know, of course he didn't want polygamy, but we know it was allowed, you know, in past history of the children of Israel. So, you know, we can't say that it wasn't with the wives and their concubines and that sort of thing. I consider, you know, we could look at those things, but God has, you know, has specific reasons for doing what he does and giving these special rules for it. But I just wanted to bring those things out that I thought was pretty interesting. Now, question two says, what are the specifics mentioned here about the firstborn son and his inheritance? The firstborn son. What does he say? What's the firstborn son get? He gets everything, right? But then God throws a little, I call it a curveball in here, and says, what about if, and you know, we're going to have, what, Rachel and Leah, we can bring that up, you know, the two sisters that were married to the same man, and there were some issues there. One was loved and one was not. And their inheritance wound up being what? Basically the same, didn't it? Or was going to be when they got the land of Canaan. Their descendants were going to have, even their descendants directly or through their concubines, were going to have a place to live in the land of Canaan. You know, Manasseh had already gotten his part over there and some of the others, but then they were all going to have a place in the land of Canaan. So they were equally, in that sense, even though just called her name, and I can't think of it. Anyway, Rachel was the most loved. We know that. So the idea is the fact that these were set up for a reason, and the idea is the fact that the firstborn always gets the inheritance. He gets a, I guess you'd say it's divided into thirds, and he gets two-thirds. That's really what it comes down to. If there's two sons, the firstborn gets two-thirds, the latter son gets one-third. And that's just the way it was. And it did not depend on the wife or how he felt about his wife, that wife, or anything. In other words, the most loved wife did not get special treatment with her son. And I guess that's because human nature would say, oh, I love her more, so I want to give her son more. You know, that's human nature. But he said, that's not allowed. Anything, anybody else? Yeah. Right. I mean, it's as I call it, we see that throughout the Old Testament, how that other son was treated, you know. And like you say, God rewarded them. I mean, even in the New Testament, the story of the prodigal son, he divided his inheritance. Yeah, I mean, this was that's not the way God intended. That's what he always would answer them. God didn't intend it that way. But because of the hardness of your hearts, he allowed those things. So there were some specific things about that firstborn son and his inheritance. And like I say, always we need to think about those things. Question 3 says, what happens to a rebellious son who won't listen to his parents? Stoned to death, right? But what happens first? Bring him to the elders. In other words, they take the proper, I call it the proper route for judgment upon this rebellious son. What does the parents call? What do the parents call him? Glutton. Do you think that was true? I can say, I guess thinking about this. Okay, I got a sorry son. He's not a glutton. He's not a drunkard, but he just won't listen to me. Can I still go stone him? No. But I think probably what it amounted to, when they were saying these things, that was the attitude of that rebellious son. How did God feel about rebellion from the children of Israel? He wasn't happy, was it? He did not make him happy, did it? Okay. So, you know, it seems like, you know, it wasn't just that the son was rebellious, you know. I guess we've all, men or women, have been rebellious sometimes in our teenage years and that sort of thing. It's not so much that he was rebellious, but he was disobedient and disrespectful. He was not only did not honor them, which was what? One of the Ten Commandments, to honor your father and mother. Okay? And so the result was death. Now, you know, How many times have you, well, if you have children, how many times do you threaten, I'm going to whip you till you holler or whatever, you know? Or something like that, you know? Threaten with punishment. Let's just say it that way. This was serious punishment, wasn't it? But that's the way God wanted people to deal and understand. You do not disrespect my commandments. And that's what that was. That was a total disrespect for honor your father and mother. And I think that's why the punishment was so severe. What's that? Yes, exactly. Yeah. Publicly, yeah. They're humiliated, yeah. Yeah. All Israel shall hear in fear. Yeah. And you know, I don't know if y'all remember, I've asked the questions about how many times does it say this, hear in fear, or how many times does it say, purge the evil from your midst? I got a list this time. But we may talk about that later on, but to me, that's what Deuteronomy is talking about. There's a purpose in that. God never wants evil amongst his people. In the New Testament, it's the same way. He does not want evil in his church. We studied 1 Corinthians about a year or so ago, started anyway, and that was one of the biggest things they had. They had adultery when a son had his father's wife. And it was okay. They were just letting it go. They were not pointing out the fact that that was a sin. You have to stop sinning. Didn't say anything about that. Just letting it go. And Paul called them out on it and said, you got to stop that. So it wasn't that fact. The idea of hearing and fearing meant this is what God's commands are. When he said honor your father and mother, he was serious. And you fear him, what? Because of the circumstances you placed yourself in. He can punish you at any time, but he does not punish you unjustly. Remember, he judges righteously. His justice is righteous. You deserve to be punished when you get punished by God. So think about, you know, those things, and just remind your children how good they got it now that you don't stone them to death, okay? when they start giving you what for, as I call it. But the idea is the fact that the God's punishment was severe for disobedience to his commands. Question 4 says, what specific rule did God make about criminals who were put to death by hanging? Now, these are not innocent people. These are people who were caught, judged, and sentenced to hang until they died. So what does he say about that? I'm sorry? Don't leave them there overnight. Why? Because they probably start stinking pretty soon. But anyway, we've emphasized this a couple of times. He wants the children of Israel to be pure. He wants them to be not unclean, but clean. He wants them to be righteous, not unrighteous. So when you've got something that represents unrighteousness, which this criminal did because he had disobeyed the law, then you want to get rid of it as fast as you can. And he did not want it in their midst. That's part of what we're talking about. Purge the evil from your midst. And that even included the dead body. Okay. Question 5 says, what were the children of Israel to do about lost possessions and animals? Lost animals. Just a general thought on that. Yeah, if you can find them or if they come to get them. Yeah. It wasn't anything specific. But if they just stayed there, they didn't come, nobody came to get them, you didn't know who they were, what'd you do with them? You treated them like they were your own, right? You took care of them, whatever, you know. It wasn't the fact that, you know, it wasn't wrong to keep them. Now, if you knew who it was and you kept it, that's what made it wrong. Now, what's that? Yeah, not only that, too, but let me see. No, that's not. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I got a point I want to make. And we'll talk about that on question 10. And that may not make sense to you, but it will, I think, when we get down to it. But, you know, he says, you know, save them until the owner shows up and claims them or keep them. In other words, don't kill them and eat them. Don't sacrifice them. Save them until the owner shows up. And if not, then they become your possessions. Treat them with respect. Basically, he said, treat them with respect because they may not be yours. Now, the next question is one that's probably going to be a hard for people to figure out, I think. What does God say? What did God say about, I call it cross-dressing? That's basically what it amounts to. I just put it in our regular nomenclature here. What did he say about it here? Yeah, it was an abomination to the God. What did we talk about? We talked about abomination a pretty good bit last week, didn't we? Was it last week? And what did we say? It's what God detested. He hated. Anything that became an abomination, he listed a bunch of things that were abomination to him, and this just adds another one to it. Like I say, that list was not exhaustive, and I didn't do a list on that, okay? I may put that for next week, so hold that for next time. But the idea is the fact that God goes back to Genesis. What did he do? He created male and female. He created them separately. Alike, but different. And that will never change, no matter what the world says. And that's basically what he's saying here. A man is not the same as a woman. A woman is not the same as a man. There's no need for them to dress alike. I know, yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. But the idea that, you know, as I call it, in today's society, we're just being bombarded with it. And, have been for, what, probably 15 or 20 years now. We just kind of sort of shoved it to the side, but now it's in our face. And that's sad to say, but that's what's happened. You show this verse to somebody, they don't want to hear about it. You're judging me. Well, yeah, because God said your fruits, we'll judge you by your fruits or your actions. We'll judge you that way. And yeah, your judgment is that you disobey God. And you're an abomination to him by doing that. And so I think, you know, we have to be ready to stand up when that time comes. It's going to be tough. But I just thought I had to ask that question. I was trying to figure out how I was going to ask that question, but I thought, cross-dressing, let's talk about that, you know. Yeah. Yeah, we're haters. We're going to be called haters. We're going to be called judgmental. We're going to be called all these other things. But that's just what God's called them. That's what God has called them. Yeah. It is not, the emphasis is, it's not my judgment, it's God's judgment. You know, and God's judgment is always, always, always righteous and just. Yep. That's it. All right, let's move on. When he talks about the seventh question, says, what is God teaching Israel with the laws on mixing animals and seed? I mean, seems trivial, doesn't it? You know? I decided we needed to go back. Turn to the book of Leviticus, chapter 19. Let's just look at a couple of verses. Go to 19 and 19. 19 and 19. Starts out in Leviticus 19:19 says, you shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. You shall not show your field with two kinds of seed, nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material. You know, don't get me started on the two kinds of cloth, because I don't have no explanation for that, other than the fact that, again, we're talking about what God wants. What God wants Israel to be pure. He wants them to be different from those people in the land of Canaan that they're fixing to go in there and conquer. He's telling them these things in order to prepare them for that. Of course, let's go back to Genesis 1 again and look at a verse there. Genesis 1, 21 to 25. So God, 21 says, and so God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, in which the waters swam according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, fill the waters of the seas, and birds multiply in the earth. And there was evening and morning. Then he said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. So God ordained, be fruitful and multiply. He told man to do that. Here in Genesis, but he also told him after the flood, he told Adam and his descendants, and his children, his sons and their wives, to be fruitful and multiply. In other words, go replenish the earth. And he told the animals that he saved on the ark to do the same thing. So, you know, he was not doing anything different by telling them this or reminding them of this. He was just reminding them, this is my laws I've set into place. Don't violate them. To me, that's what he was teaching when he mentioned those things. Now, I asked question eight, well, I guess you could say tongue-in-cheek, because we kind of know the answer, but it says, sexual immorality was forbidden. When accusations are made of virgin infidelity, who wins? I know, you're saying, what are you talking about? I'll give you my answer. No one, okay. I mean, as I call it, when a man betrothed to a woman, he considered her to be a virgin. Her parents, there was a guarantee, or there was a dowry, all these other things that were involved in this. And so there was I'll call it a guarantee that she was a virgin. But when she becomes his wife and he realizes she's not, there's some consequences for it. There's some consequences for it. Not only from her, but from her parents too. So, and as I call it, there's not a winner in something like that. The only thing that can win is that's forgiveness. When we bring it to our reality and our day and time, is when sexual immorality occurs in a husband-wife relationship, adultery occurs in a married couple, there's two options. The Bible says the guilty party can be put away or they can be divorced. But there's also another option, which people don't, for many years, people didn't talk about it, and that is forgiveness. The husband or wife can forgive their partner and continue to live with them as husband and wife, and not commit adultery again. That's permitted. That's an option. You know, I lived back in the day when marriage, divorce, and remarriage, everybody put a book out, everybody put a paper out, and saying, what if, and 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 nobody talked or preached or taught on marriage, what it is, what makes a good marriage, what makes the right kind of marriage, and what each husband and wife's responsibility was during that marriage. All they wanted to do was talk about, well, what if this or what if that, you know, and morally about divorce than they were talking about marriage. And that's a sad thing on my ancestors, I'll just call it that. Because the church needed to hear sermons on marriage and what it was and what it meant and the commitment that you made before man and God to one another and to God too. And so, you know, that was a failure at times. We need more sermons on just marriage. We don't need to hear about divorce. We know what the rules are on divorce. It's pretty simple. You know, Jesus reiterated that in Matthew 19. So when we talk about sexual immorality, my emphasis is really no one wins. Yeah, John. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, okay, what is that called? bearing false witness violates another one of the Ten Commandments, doesn't it? Okay. Let me see, where were we? Exactly. Country. Yeah, that's a sad thing too. Okay, I hope you got where we're here, Johnny, talking about Jesus, the instance when the woman accused of adultery was brought to Jesus and said, you know, what do we do with her? Of course, they knew what chapter 22 and verses 22 through 24 says. She was to be stoned to death. But it also says both parties, both man and woman, are to be stoned to death. But they didn't bring the man with them, did they? They didn't bring the man to Jesus. They just brought the woman to Jesus because it was her fault. But who protected the woman? Jesus did. Here in the cases we've looked at a little bit here, who protected the woman? God did, didn't he? He says if she's accused of infidelity or not being a virgin and she is still a virgin and just being accused of it, well, the guy who accused her of that, what happens to him? He gets punished too, doesn't he? He gets punished severely. So, both are stoned to death when men and women are caught in adultery. Is adultery, question 10 says, is adultery an act of covetousness? Let's go. We're going to go back to Exodus. Go back to Exodus chapter 20. I'm going to read, I call it, sometimes we kind of overlook this, you know, we get them summarized. We summarize them a little too much sometimes, I think. Exodus chapter 20. There in verse 17. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. You know, he's already said, do not commit murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. But covetousness covers all of those and more, doesn't it? Covers all of those and more. And he specifically, that's why I like 17, he says, do not covet their house, their wife, their male servant, their female servant, ox, donkey, or anything that is your neighbor. Covetousness is a sin that's prevalent today. We don't call it that. We have other names for it. And in some instances, covetousness is deemed successful. And that's sad. That's sad. But don't think that adultery is not an act of just an act of sex. It is an act of covetousness and immorality. And it generates from the heart not the acceptance of God's rules. It generates, I call it hatred to yourself and to your spouse and to the other spouse and all that other things. In other words, you only think of yourself when that happens, because that's what covetousness does. Covetousness is thinking of yourself above everything else. Well, John alluded to this a little bit while ago. And question 11 says, why was there a difference in immorality in the city and in the country? In other words, we're talking about rape in the city and rape in the country. And he brought that up. If a woman gets raped in the city, generally there's going to be people around. I'm not saying every circumstance was. And if she cries out for help, she can get help most of the time. People will come to her aid. But in the country, there's, you know, isolated and everything else. And you think, well, why does God say that? What he's saying is, and it goes back to that women need to be protected. I think, to me, that's what he's saying. Women need to be protected. There's some protection for them. In the country, and nobody, you can complain all you want to, and nobody's going to hear you. And that's usually the way the perpetrator's planning. In the city, the perpetrator's probably planning for no one to hear. But if somebody does and stops it, then that's great, that's good. But that doesn't mean that sin has not occurred. But it means that the woman has a chance to escape. Let's just say it that way. If she's in the city. In the country, a woman doesn't have a chance because nobody's going to hear her in her cries. And that's what he's talking about. That's God's protection for women in the case of actual rape. I didn't want to dwell on it, but I wanted to bring that out. God has a lot of different ways to try to protect women. And we see it in a lot of these different laws he makes. Let's start looking at the third page in our handout. We're going to get a little bit part. Let me see how far we are. Oh, we're not going to have much time. It's okay. We've discussed all this already, but I want to get a couple of points in. It says, we've previously been looking at the first four commandments summed up by loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. The fifth through the tenth commandments are covered in this next section. They deal with parents and children, husbands and wives, theft, false testimony, greed. Moses' purpose is not to be exhaustive. Purpose is not to be an exhaustive list of those laws covering every possible situation. Instead, he illustrates how the Ten Commandments apply in specific cases so that we can truly understand the heart of these last commands. When we do so, we will begin to see the breadth of God's law. Command not to steal means that an Israelite must not have different weights for cheating his brother or out of a fair trade. It also means that a worker must be paid for his work without delay. In the same way, Jesus challenges us. We commit murder or commit adultery when we think it in our hearts. So you see, hopefully you see, how the Old Testament commandments were taking us and telling us what would happen to them if they committed them, if they committed, violated those laws. But then, under the new covenant, the new covenant, when Jesus talks about murder, when he talks about adultery, he says, if you think it, if you have hatred in your heart that you want somebody to die, you've committed murder, whether you actually pull the trigger or not. The same way with the lust in your heart can cause adultery. We have a better covenant. We also are more restrictive in that sense. And in other words, we have a better chance to have forgiveness, but we also have a better chance to sin too. In the fact that God reads our minds, so to speak. He knows what the intent of our heart is. He knows what we're thinking and what our purpose is. And that can be scary. But that brings us to one of those other statements we talked about. We're not going to talk about it right now. You remember, I said, I got a list. I got two lists. I got hear and fear. You hear what God has to say, you need to fear him. Now, when it say fear, does that mean be afraid of him? In a sense, yes. But it more means honor him. Hear him and honor him. How do you honor God? Obeying his commands. Okay? And let me see. 16 times in the book of Deuteronomy. Basically, he says, hear in fear. There's a couple of places where he doesn't use those words, but it's basically the same thing toward the end of the book. I didn't include those. Purge the evil from your midst. It occurs 9 times. And mostly here in the last chapters. We started in chapter 13, in these last chapters, specifically in tonight's lesson, 1, 2, 3, 4 times. So, if we're going to get something out of Deuteronomy, what we need to get: purge the evil from your midst, hear and fear him. I just think those are some things that need to stick with us. Fixing to be through here. The thought of when we talk about the Ten Commandments, in the New Testament, they reduced them. Love the Lord your God with all, the first commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Second is love your neighbor as yourself. And that's, like we say, that's how it's divided up. The first four are talking about God and our relationship to him. The last six are talking about ourselves and our relationship with our fellow man or our neighbor, and specifically parents, neighbors, that sort of thing. So when we look at those things, this illustrates to us how God's commands are just, how they are faithful to him. He wants us to be faithful to him. We're not going to go by, as we go through this, we're not doing it verse by verse, but the handout goes through the subjects pretty much, and I give you the verses that are covered, because I think the first one there on the list is marriage and divorce, and it's mentioned in 21 and 22 and 24. So this way it kind of combines them. I was able to get that done for us. I think it's a better way, and that's why I was talking about. It's going to be a little different tonight. But next week we'll